Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
All right. Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're talking Star Wars, because, you know, there's a Star Wars movie in theaters for the first time in 6 years.
No, it's actually more, 2019, so it'll be, it's seven.
7 years.
Seven, almost seven to the day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, Skywalker was in December, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I saw it the same day I saw Cats. Then that was terrible. They were both terrible. But anyways, yeah, that's right.
What a shitty day at the movies.
You're telling me 5 hours, because both of them are like 2.5 hours long. Like, and the worst part was that they were at like arguably two of the best theaters in Hollywood, like one was at the El Cap, which is like Disney's like go-to du jour theater, right? And then I had to go over to the Man Chinese across the street and watch Cats, in like, you know, the most like the one of the best theaters in the world. Like, so it was like the worst movies in like the clearest, in the best possible presentation. It's like, you know, at least if it's like a shitty presentation, it like, you know, it muffles it, it dulls it.
It up. Almost lends, like, seeing a shitty movie in a like rat house theater, like, lends itself to the movie. And you're like, yes. Well, this is kind of fun, I guess. But like seeing a movies you wish you enjoyed in theaters that, you know, are immaculate. And you're just like, but these movies suck, man. Like, what a bad day at the theater for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's 6.5 years. So, close to seven. Wild that it's been that long since, from a company that were like, we're going to have a Star Wars every year. It's going to be fantastic, to like, a decade into them making Star Wars movies, they're like, what's happening?
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to be part of the conversation. And it all goes back to the same thing. Like, and we'll get into this later, cause I think we both have a few things that we want to kind of touch upon. It's fandom. Like, I think that it's time to put the earplugs in.
Internet, man. Yep. Like, we have to do something about it. Like, I feel like...
Don't listen to them.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. But, you know, it's just monkeys in cages banging on the bars, man.
Well, like,
It's crazy how loud... Like, we'll talk about some other things and we can get into Star Wars, because I'm gonna go on a rant and I don't need to. Long running superhero show ended this week, and you have not watched any of the season of The Boys, right?
I watched we talked about last week. I watched the first episode and I was so bumblefucked, like, confused that it really pissed me off. And, you know, I was thinking about this. Eric Kripke has a real panache for bungling endings. He really does, because Supernatural had 20 seasons to get it right and it didn't.
Yeah.
Like,
unfortunately, by the time Supernatural came along, he had already kind of like put his heart into The Boys, though.
Yeah.
So this makes me wonder, like, what are you working on?
Vault Rising.
Yeah. That you were like an absentee father on this
again,
like, final season of The Boys that look, I'm not going to spoil anything because I figure you'll watch it eventually. Yeah. But it ends the way you think it's going to end. Like, there's nothing truly, truly surprising. And I don't want, like, I've seen a lot of comparisons to the last season of Game of Thrones, and I don't think it's that level of like, holy shit, you guys lost the plot. But it's just not that exciting.
Well, of course, the internet ruins everything, and that's a through line through our conversations always. Some of the stuff has been ruined for me. One specific thing, because people were really upset about it, and then I saw it, and I was like, oh, fuck you guys. Why are you telling me this shit? Just because it's been 2 days since the premiere does not mean that you have to ruin a character's fate. And not really a character, but a character. And you already probably know what I'm talking about, because like I'm not gonna talk about it here just because I haven't seen the full context of it. It's just somebody just decided to put the scene up. And I'm like, oh, fuck you. And I literally commented on their page. I was like, you know what, guys? Fuck you. And then I was just like, blocked. Because that's how much it pissed me off. Because it's like, I don't care if the ending is subpar, but let me come to it myself. Give me a week. But you can't, can you? Because the internet, no. The monkeys on the internet need the fucking discourse. They need the clicks.
It is literally that, like, people give Gunn a lot of shit. Certain people, for sure.
Yeah. But
the scene in Superman, where it's just a bunch of monkeys typing into the internet, like, it's such an apt, like,
a very thing. Accurate, yes.
Like, where it's just like, oh, wait, this is what, these are the people you're listening to? Like, because there's 1,000 of them, like, versus the millions of people who, I mean, yeah, I know so many people who just don't even fucking care about The Boys or even know what it is. So
yeah,
it's like, I don't know. It's kind of stupid. It echoes kind of like the way I feel about the Star Wars quote fans. It's not terrible. It's The Boys. The problem with the final season of The Boys is it's just a season of The Boys with an ending for a handful of characters. Like, it ends for a handful of characters. That's it. And honestly, you could keep going after this. Like, it's only the end because maybe you couldn't get any more money and everybody was like, yeah, it's been 7 years, man. Let's go do something else. There's nothing that feels, you know, I'm trying to think of like a drama or action show that had a season finale to compare it to, and I'm just coming up blank. But you know, the best finales leave you like, as bad as a lot of people think The Office like last few seasons are, I disagree with them, but that finale really, really brings it home. You know, I know that's
not an
action drama, but it's stuff like that where it's like it evokes something. And this, it should evoke something, but I don't know. I think the show desensitized like its viewers to the real like emotional weight of people getting, you know, unceremoniously obliterated.
Yeah.
So,
also, you know. Well, also, you know, and I actually understand more of the reason why, because Anthony Starr has kind of very, very, very lightly touched upon this. He fucking hated playing Homelander. He hated that it got the wrong, and Kripke too. Kripke. Both of them hated the fact that no matter what they did, this guy was a fucking hero to people. when he wasn't the hero. And that's the problem, is that ultimately The Boys is a cautionary tale that people take as super text of heroes. Like, and I don't know, like, you, like, if your audience is fundamentally broken, I can understand, like, I almost, like, it's like, it's weird, because it's like, if Kripke, if you had some real balls, what you would have done is just walked away from it. Like, really pissed people off and walked away. Like, not had tried to end it, but you ended it, which means that you're kind of like, you're like, I'm still going to end this, because even irregardless of the people that are shittily like heroizing and lionizing Homelander, I'm going to still go ahead and finish the story. And no matter what, these people are not going to see what, like, instead of not giving them the satisfaction of an ending and just saying, fuck you guys. He's like looking at it, well, there's millions of people that actually do see this. But it's like, it doesn't matter when the internet discourse is so loud, and that's the only internet discourse, that I don't know. It's ultimately, it's really complicated. And I'm like, you know what? You should have just walked away from it. Like, if you had walked away last season, that would have been some balls. Because, yeah, like, last season ended in a way that, like, it suggests something's going on. Like, the fight continues. But ultimately, they've lost. And I think that that's a stronger point than whatever they do in this thing where it's like, he's going to get it. Homelander's going to get his comeuppance, however he gets his comeuppance. Right? Like, because, like, I don't know. It's a really kind of weird thing. Like as soon as, like, I heard there was a season 7, and then I started hearing about all of the response to it, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Okay, I guess. I mean, like you said, there, like, he's got Boys Mexico that he's writing, and you've heard about the casting, right?
Yeah.
I
hate to say I don't care, because the world can be really fun and there's some great characters.
Yeah.
But I honestly think the real world sucks so much right now that, like, the shittiness of the world of The Boys is really hard to, like, revel in. Which
exactly.
Is it's another problem. It's not Kripke's fault, but no. It's another problem with watching that show is, like, yeah, I don't want to see dour, sad, like, oh, look how wild this stuff is, when I wake up every day and it's just like, wait, we did what now? Like, what's going on? Like, I mean, there is, I do want to spoil one moment in the finale. Because you'll appreciate this. There is a moment where Homelander is in the White House and he's being pressured into, like, meeting all of these people because he's, you know, it's the Trump equivalent, except he's got superpowers. And they tout him as, like, the wealthiest man in the world or something. Clearly an analog for Elon Musk. And as he's being introduced, he's like, who is that? And they're like, you know, he did this, he did this, he did this. He's an amateur astronaut. And he walks into the office and immediately starts spouting off some shit about white birth rates to Homelander. And, like, it's probably the one redeeming Homelander thing in the entire fucking season. But Homelander, like, they walk into the background, like, onto a balcony in this office in the White House. And the forefront is, like, these other characters talking. So just in the background, you see Homelander grab the guy by the shirt and then launch into the air. And then they disappear. And then Homelander comes back down alone and then walks back into the forefront of the shot. And I forget who it is that's with him. Maybe Allfather. I was like, where did whatever the guy's name, what happened? And Homelander goes, you said he was an astronaut. I took him to space. And it's fucking It's so great. It's so great. It's like one of the best moments in the history of the show. And it's unfortunately buried in a lot of other shit. But yeah. It is one of the best beats of like, you know, they don't really get to deal with a lot of the stuff that mirrors their show in real life because it's almost like you can't. But that moment of just being like, and you know they want to like add in other comps, but yeah. You can't do the Bezos thing, right? You're on Amazon, but it's great. It's one of the best moments of the show. Like if you can just find that clip, it's so fucking great. And I wish the rest of the season, if they were going to play it wild and wacky, if they had just done stuff like that, it would have been fine. But they try to do it a little heavy handed and it's, just the juxtaposition of the two don't really work because you're like, this is the last season. Like, why aren't you being more serious? And then they get super serious, but then they're also doing the goofy thing with this. It's kind of uneven. But it's there. I think it ended the only way it had to end and it's fine. And I do want to bring up, weirdly for a network that I was like, I always forget I fucking have Apple, it's not called Apple Plus anymore, but Apple TV, whatever they're calling it now. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, I would just forget that I have it. I'm like, oh yeah, like I need to check out some of these shows. Now it seems like the only things I watch are on Apple.
Yeah.
And it's great. I don't know that I've watched a show on Apple. Movies, yes. TV shows, I don't think I've watched a show that I've been like, well, that was disappointing. Every show, they seem to hit it out of the park. My favorite actress on the planet is in a new show. That might be yes. A little hyperbolic, but
no, you dedicated a podcast to her show. Come on now.
Yeah. So there's a new show called Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed on Apple TV. And it's a little weird that Apple has two shows about that kind of revolve around not just like sex work but specifically OnlyFans.
Yes, from what I understand, like, you know, one that just ended brilliantly.
If you're not watching Margo Has Money Troubles, it just had its finale, fucking great. So
if he doesn't, like, just as a side note, if Nick Offerman doesn't at least get a nomination for supporting actor, there is no justice. Like,
the cast is insane.
Yeah.
Like, it's so fucking good.
And Nicole Kidman showing up, doing a completely different role than what you expect from her. Like, well, she's always so weird dour. Because,
like, we've still got a couple episodes. Yeah. We've still got a couple episodes of her show on Amazon.
Yes.
The forensic show.
Yeah. Scarpetta.
Scarpetta.
Yeah.
And so like watching that almost at the same time as her showing up on this show, which she also executive produces, it reminds you of, she's fucking good. She's a good actress. Like, I don't know what, like, happened. I know, like, she kind of overshadowed by her marriage to Tom Cruise. And then, you know, like, she is about her kids. So, like, I know she didn't take a lot of work because of family. But I don't know. Now that she's A, producing stuff of this quality and acting in the stuff she's producing, like at this high caliber. I don't know, man. I think we're in for a treat. Like, I think we're about to get like the best run of Nicole Kidman shit anybody could ever hope for. Cause like, she is also fun. There's not anybody who's bad in the show. Like, no. Greg Kinnear, you don't want to love.
Oh my God. Like, he's so complicatedly good in this yeah. show.
Like, it's like, I love this man, and he's delivering an excellent performance for a character that I'm constantly on the fence about. And
what happens in the finale, I did yeah. not see coming. Like, I was like it took my breath away. Like, it sucker punched me, and I was like, you son of a bitch. Like, you, like, and that's all you could think. Like, it's the same thing Michelle Pfeiffer is like, but he is so good because he is so kind of like, he's extremely complicated. I don't even know how to actually describe people, like, how, like, it defies expectations. His character, because you think that he's going to be this one type of person, but he continually sits there and throws you for a loop. It's a, yeah. like, it's, like, hit, like, this year, like, I know that I keep on wanting Harrison Ford to win something for his work on Shrinking,
yeah.
But between Offerman and Kinnear this year, like, I literally was like, this is highly complex work. Like, how do you not give Greg yeah. Kinnear the award because he's so goddamn good? Like, it's not awards baity. It's just like, it's so, like, it uses Greg Kinnear in a way that I never thought that Greg Kinnear could be used, but it uses his charm to, like, get you, like, you know these guys. You know these guys. These guys are, like, really real. Like yeah,
I growing up in the, like, religious South, knew a lot of those guys. And, you know, it's just such a, like, grounded, solid performance. In a world, like, everybody in that show is I don't want to say a character, like, it's so wacky, but they are volatile. Like,
yes,
every single character. And he is so, like, grounded and focused and measured in everything he does that he then becomes, like, the focus of, like, there's something wrong with him. And there kind of is, except it isn't that it's bad, but it's just not bad. It's not the, like, oh, you find out he's a pedophile. No. You know what I mean? Like, you're waiting for that. And it's like, no, he just does the wrong thing at the wrong time. And
he does, you know, he does the right
reasons.
Right. Yeah. He does the right thing for the wrong reasons at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Like, that is the most complicated thing that, like, because at the end of the day, it wasn't that I was mad that he did it. It was the fact that he did it when he did it. Because it was like, you son of a bitch, you didn't think about the consequences of it. You just thought you were doing a good deed. And that's the problem, is that, you know, it's like the whole thing of, like, the best intention. The road to ruin is laid with people's, like, you know, best intentions, right? And, like, I don't know, like, it sets up a second season that I feel like Apple has this wonderful thing of, for season one is good, but season two is so much better. Think about, like, Ted Lasso, yeah. Shrinking. And then they kind of, like, it's a weird, like, we won't get into their third season fall-offs, but, like, I'm really looking, by the end, I was really looking forward to the, like, to seeing this weird, dysfunctional nuclear family and how they're going to yeah. have to interact at the end. Because, like, even Michael Ariango's character is, he's a fucking asshole, but...
You kind of come around, like, at yeah. the end, it's like, okay, well, he kind of gets forced into doing what he should have done all along. And it's the like hope of like, will this make him a better person? Yes. And you kind of see glimpses of that there at the end. It's a great show. Like Apple continues to impress me. Like Widow's Bay continues to be wonderful.
That's the one that I'm getting to next. Like I think that we're going to probably do a 1-2 combo of, I just started watching. I watched the first two episodes of The Burrows, AKA Spielberg Cocoon, Cocoon riff, which is fantastic. And we'll get to it later, but I'm also going to do Widow's Bay because it's like, it's got that kind of like, it very much feels like I started watching the first 5 minutes just to get an idea. And it does have that very much. Like, I think you were saying it's like Amityville, like not Amityville, the horror, but like Amityville from Jaws.
Yeah.
It's very much got that Jaws feel.
It's the Jaws, if it was written by Stephen King. And not about a shark.
Yes.
Like it's wild. But back to Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed, yeah, starring Tatiana Maslany. Two episode premiere drop. Great. It's from David Rosen, who film people will know from, I think Sugar,
yes,
was probably his biggest like film thing. There was a lot of, or not film thing. It was movie.
That was Apple TV.
Yeah.
Yes. Have you seen that?
No. I've heard a lot.
It's wild.
I've heard a lot about it. It's Citadel. I haven't heard anybody talk about Citadel. So I don't know if that's a big show or not.
It's a huge show. Like it's a huge budget show. Citadel. Well, like the reason why I want to watch it is because again, talking about the internet ruining things. There's a like season two has an action scene with Stanley Tucci that Stanley Tucci trained for like 6 months. And the reason why he looks so yoked in like Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah, that explains why he looks so good in that.
It's because he has a huge action scene in it. It's like a oneer that he does. Like he gets caught because he's like the director or something like that of Citadel. Like I knew he was in the first season, but now it makes me want to actually watch the show because there are so many people. And plus, like, so like the first season costs like $300 million and the second season cost about that much, if not more. And then there's a season in between from Korea. There's like three seasons in between with like different parts of the world were given like a super amount of money from Amazon to make these action things. So like there's one that's in India Hindi that stars like the biggest Hindi Indian actors out there because it was like a huge project. It's wild. Okay. Everything I've heard about Citadel is like the Russos were given carte blanche or given Kate Blanchett, and they took it, and it's the thing that you wanted The Gray Man to be, which is like a little bit more grounded and real and like actual shot on location and not blue screen bullshit, that they didn't do. But I've heard that I haven't seen the action scene. I've just heard about it, and I heard Stanley Tucci talking about like, you know, he worked for like 8 or 9 months on working out to get physically fit. And if you notice, he is super trim. I mean, he's always been in a good in shape, but I mean, he's kind of buff. You're like, what? Why is Tucci? Why?
Yeah. Is he in a Marvel movie? What's going on? Like, he's already been in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, he played Erskine. Come on now, dude. No, not you, but yeah. But anyways, back to Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed.
So the premise of the show is that Tatiana Maslany plays, she's a divorced mom for her ex is Jake Johnson. And she has a predilection, or really she has an involvement with a specific guy on OnlyFans. And one night during their video chats, he gets kidnapped and she witnesses it. And then starts getting phone calls like saying he's going to be killed if she doesn't pay up some money. And
oh, wow.
Of course, it's the like, is this real? Is this fake? And And like, it's both of those things in a really weird, wild way. And she's, I don't know if she can give a bad performance, but she is excellent here. I don't know if the show can sustain, like, what it's doing, because I don't know, like, she becomes not essential to the, like, the plot is the thing she, like, stumbles into. Uh-huh. It's not really the, like, what's going on with her life. Like, she accidentally stumbles into a plot, and I unfortunately don't think they wrote a character who is smart enough to be in the world that she's found herself in. Not that she's a stupid character. She's just not, she's kind of like wild and impulsive, and obviously because, you know, she makes bad decisions because she got into kind of a relationship with a cam boy.
Yeah.
And may or may not be getting scammed. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I'm not saying she's stupid. She's just vulnerable and easily manipulated because of what's going on in her personal life. Mm-hmm. Like, she's in a custody battle, and like, it's just, it's kind of crazy. I don't like, I think you should watch it because it's really, really good and she's great. This could be a one and done show. So I hope they have something in mind, because I'm not sure where, like, this could go past, you know, 8 to 10 episodes. So, but it's, she's great. It's extremely tense, very well made. Rosen, like, all the work he's directing other people's stuff, like, it's certainly paid off. He's got an eye for, like, what you need in, like, to propel a show. Because, like, immediately at the end of the first episode, I didn't know it was a 2-episode premiere, but I was like, fuck, I gotta wait till next week to find out what happens. And it was like, next episode? I was like, oh, yes, next episode, please. like, I would have binged the whole thing. Like, it's really, really good. It's just, I'm a little worried about, like, it sustaining itself. So even for 10 episodes, it might be a little much. Like,
gotcha.
This would have been a great film. Like, I often, you know, don't say stuff like that about shows, but because I like spending time in the world. I'm way more into TV than I am movies. But yeah, like 2 hours and 15 minutes of this with a like really good wrap up, I could see. I'm not sure. We'll see. But it's worth it for her and her performance alone. If you like Jake Johnson, you'll probably be like, he's doing really good work here. If you don't like Jake Johnson, watch this show, because like, you're going to be like, yeah, this is why I don't like Jake Johnson.
my favorite, like, so like, I love this career that he's gotten into post New Girl, because it's very, I don't know how, like, how to actually, like, talk about it without kind of, like, he kind of went in this really weird kind of, like, you know how, like, Bob, like, man, like, I know fucking Bob Odenkirk, but you know how, like, Bob just decided, fuck it, I want to be an action guy. And he just became an action guy? Like, yeah. Like, Jake Johnson was like, you know what? I'm kind of tired of being this kind of schlubby fat guy. So I'm going to be a thin schlubby guy, but I'm going to get all of those like interesting roles, and just decided to get a bunch of things like Tag, Self-Reliance. Like, his voice work is Peter B. Parker might be some of my favorite Spider-Man stuff. And I was going to ask
We just watched. Stephanie had never seen the Spider-Verse movies. Uh-huh. We've been on our Spider-Man thing for a couple of months now. We watched the first Spider-Verse movie because she didn't know who Spider-Noir was. And we're getting ready to watch that show next week. And I was like, oh, we have to watch. He's a minimal part of the second movie. So we'll get to that. But I'm like, we have to watch the first movie so that like you can kind of get a feel for what that character is. She really, really enjoyed it. That first Spider-Verse movie might be the best Spider-Man movie ever made.
I don't know if
it could get better than that. It's so fucking good, man.
No, you're 100% right. Like I personally feel that it is the best Spider-Man movie. Like the first one, yeah. The second one is still top five. It's just it's doing like the problem is that we should have already had Beyond the Spider-Verse. We should have had it a long time ago, but then they shut down production and then they restarted production and then they shut down production. They've done it like three or four times because they were like, I know what the thing was. They were arguing over the budget because literally it's going to cost them. From what I understood is that it's literally going to cost them double what the second one did, and the second one cost them like 50% more across the Spider-Verse, cost them 50% more to make than Into the Spider-Verse because the animation rendering time, but it's also a highly more complex movie, and it's also like 30 minutes longer. Like I always forget that Across the Spider-Verse is literally like 2 hours and 20 minutes.
It's so much different with animation because like, especially now that we don't actually shoot on film, for the most part, like animation, you really have to look at it as like you need to know that runtime going in because you're like as much as anything, that runtime is your budget because 30 more minutes of animation. That's a third of most animated movies. That's like adding a third of the budget to the movie. Like you're already making it longer, but now you're making it 2.5 hours long. I mean, that's two animated movies. So you're just making two Pixar level movies at once. But so you're going to have a double Pixar budget,
but not even like Logan, not even like double Pixar, triple Pixar, because think about how complex those movies, like Pixar is like beautiful, but they're very lean. They're very leanly economically like visual, right? They're still stunning, but like Into the Spider-Verse, like Across the Spider-Verse is a movie that I've seen at least 15 times. And I'm still picking things out of it because it is so like they said that there's the verse scene where you go in where all the Spider-Men are. There's every single Spider-Man or Spider-Man that's ever existed in the history of comics. They made it so that long tracking shot had every single Spider-Man. Like, and it was all animated. Like every single one of them was designed, created, and animated. It's like, there's like this complexity to things in that movie that like, I understand why they stopped, but at the same time, I don't, because it's like, these movies were like, the first one was big. The second one that came out around like that came out in like one of our favorite summer years. It was summer 2023 and it was huge. Like it made $1 billion. If your fucking franchise makes $1 billion, produce the next one. You like, this is the problem with Sony is they continually cheap out. Like I'm really like, I'm kind of worried about this next Superman, this next Spider-Man. The closer I get, because I just am, because like we've only seen one trailer and that's just the one trailer. We haven't heard anything else. We haven't like seen anything like whatchamacallit's already like the Odyssey has already started its discourse. And like, Like, you know, I'm not even going to get into that stupid shit with Elon, fucking idiot.
More internet fucking...
Yeah. Like,
just shut down the internet.
Exactly. But everything I see from that movie is fucking impressive. Like, I'm like, oh, wow. Whoa, what the hell? Like, there's a physicality... Like, there, like, it's impressing me to making it, like, this is going to be the movie that I need to see. Like, this is the must-see movie of the summer, where Spider-Man should be the same thing, right? It should be right up there. And I'm like, meh. I mean, you know, I'm actually kind of a little bit more excited to seeing Lobo and Supergirl. Like, you know, and that shouldn't be the case. Not because, like, anything's wrong with Supergirl, but I should be more excited, like, because I'm in the bag for, I mean, hell, I'm more excited for Spider-Noir than I am for Spider-Man. And that should not be the case, right? Like, I should not be, like, I should be excited about these things, but I'm not. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not, like Brand New Day is just kind of like, I already kind of know what's going to happen. We already know who, we pretty much know who Sadie Sink is playing. Like, you're trying to hide things again.
I still think there's going
to
be a, like, I think we're going to get thrown for a loop. Maybe, maybe not, but...
I don't know but you did see that Comic-Con and Brand New Day are literally the same weekend.
Yeah.
I know I'm being like crypto fascist idiot, but at the same time, if you're going to reveal that she's Jean Grey and you're going to have her come out with the cast of X-Men,
yeah, you're going to do it at Comic-Con.
At Comic-Con, yeah. And you're going to want to do it that same weekend so that...
We saw it with Deadpool, like, even though, like, that didn't lead to, like, another franchise.
But, no.
Like, it is kind of what they did. I won't be disappointed if that's how they introduce the X-Men. It'll just be like, I don't know, man. Like... That's what we expected you to do.
Yes.
So, like, I want to be surprised. And part of the problem is, like, I'm not... At this point, I'm just surprised when it's good. I'm not surprised at the story. And so, like, maybe I read too many comics to, you know, and pay too close attention to things. So, it's whatever.
But, I mean, at the same time, you, like... Logan, you have every right to be skeptical about this. Like, I mean, this is like of all the things that that Marvel is choosing to do, they're choosing to go back to the well with X-Men. Like, it's not like do you know what I mean? Like, we have every reason to be skeptical because, like, X-Men, like, you should be concentrating probably on X-Men 97. Just do that. Like, start there and then wait a couple of years. We're barely getting Doom. What are you doing? Like, are you so desperate? Concentrate on making good movies. Don't make new content. Make new good movies, right? Like, which, I mean, they're making okay movies, but, like, okay doesn't cut it anymore, right? Yeah. I don't know. I feel like there is some justification in what you're talking about. You know, and being kind of like, we'll see what we see, right?
I'm trepidatious, I guess.
Yeah, trepidatious is definitely, Like, I cautiously optimistic, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we did watch Spider-Verse. It is great. That's pretty much all I've been worth talking about that I've watched. I did watch a movie called Riff Raff that came out a few years ago. Great cast, terrible script. It's on Hulu. I'd say don't watch it unless you're like a Bill Murray completist.
And I am not a Bill Murray completist. Not anymore.
Yeah.
I did want to bring up a few things on the home video front. I had a great mail day that was ruined. I know this sounds weird, but I mean, we've talked about this before, about how great it is. Like, I think that part of the reason, half the reason why I love getting stuff in the reason why I started not only just getting stuff from, like, you know, like my home video, like, sources that I get stuff to cover, but also like I buy stuff myself is because of course there's things that I want. But also like, I'll be honest with you. I fucking hate bills. I hate going out to the fucking mailbox and getting a bill or getting some piece of shit mail.
Yeah.
And so like home video, like this stuff, like kind of brightens the day, right? Like along with all the shitty stuff, you get some good stuff. So I got 3 things today or 3 things this week. All steelbooks. And like the last one I'm going to talk about was really disappointing, which it's you'll hear why. The first one I got was the steelbook for Avatar: Fire and Ash, the 4K.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And part of the reason why was because it's fully loaded. Like they didn't wait for a special edition like they did with the first Avatar movie. There's a 4-hour documentary on the making of. I've watched like 20 minutes of it, and this shit is already like super detailed. Like the first 20 minutes is just talking about the script development, and literally they're talking about 4 and 5, and they like actually show like they talk about like the story and shit like that. It's like wild, like how detailed they're getting. The picture on the 4K is amazing, like just amazing. So yeah, there's that. I got the steelbook for Fincher's Fight Club, which, you know, speaking of the internet's favorite movies and incels and being shitty, the reason why I got it was because it's the only way to get the 4K. And
I like Fight Club. The internet has made it difficult to like Fight Club.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It made it almost impossible to like Fight Club. Because, like, there's so many, like, people didn't take it, like, what it was. It's a fucking joke. It's about, like, it's, like, literally about people who, like, they're, it's literally making fun of these people that ended up people wanting to be. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's wild.
Much like The Boys with Homelander, yep. Breaking Bad, Walter White, the hero is the villain. Like, you're getting it wrong.
Yes. Like,
yeah, but anyway, I mean, it's Fincher at the height of, you know, being Fincher.
Yeah.
It's been kind of uneven the last bit. But
it's the Netflix of it all. Like,
yeah.
I liked Killer. I didn't love it. But I mean, to be quite honest with you, the last thing, like, as soon as he went into, like, literally, as soon as he went into Netflixlandia, like, he's just, like, he really need, like, I liked Mank for what it was, but, like, Social Network or Mank, like, or Gone Girl, like, give me Gone Girl or Social Network, right? The reason why I got the 4K was because he worked on all his things, he worked on the 4K transfer. Stunning. Stunning. And like I said, Steelbook is the only way to get it. And I basically have everything but Gone Girl I have in 4K now with Fincher. That was the last one. Other than his Netflix movies, which he's staying on the thing. Though I have a feeling that because of Criterion's relationship with not only him, but with Netflix, that we could conceivably get them, in 4K, which if they do, buy them up, guys. And then the last one, which is a bit of a disappointment, but also there's another disappointment, is Tombstone. Now, why is Tombstone a disappointment? Was because for the first time ever, I got my steelbook and it was fucking bent.
That's the worst, man.
Fucking heartbreak. Because I spent 3 days going back and forth trying to get this resent out to me, and they basically told me I could either have a refund or I can keep it because they don't have any more of them, that they're not in print, and I can get my credit back and then wait for them to come back in print. So I did the thing which most people do not like doing, which is I fixed my steelbook, which it looks okay. But it's still heartbreaking because, like, you know, it's a steelbook. You're like, how is it bent? How do you fucking bend the goddamn thing? But then also, it doesn't come in a protective cover, right? Like, Like I buy like the hard plastic. Like I know you do the same thing. The hard plastic covers. Yeah. Because you want to save it from the dust and stuff. And like steelbooks, I don't know if people know, they're the kind of, like for me, they're the premium things. They're the things that I only buy. I mean, I like there's three movies. And there's another one that I'm going to talk about right now that is not coming out until September. Fuck you guys. They're all movies I love. So like, they're like, I only reserve them for the movies I love. And then I looked at the transfer. It's gorgeous. Like I've never seen Tombstone look like this. And then the last one is Speed Racer. My 4K steelbook did not come. And when I looked at when it's supposed to be expected delivery, September 12th of 2026. Yeah. What the actual F, guys? That's the one that I wanted to watch because
that's when mine is September 28th. So I'm with you.
I literally did not get to go see the IMAX the re-upped and IMAX version, and so I was really looking forward to this. And dude, like this is the one disc that I really wanted to like watch and. Can't watch it this weekend because it's not there. Though I've seen other people, like, you know, quote unquote influencers, and I shudder to speak, influencers that are fucking, that have it. And I'm like, how the fuck did you have it? But I don't. And who knows? Maybe we're going to get lucky, Logan. Maybe they're going to like, you know, I've seen it happen before when, like something like this happens where it's not there yet, but then all of a sudden the factory gets it and produces it and ships it out. And all of a sudden it goes from like, you know, whatever date to like tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope. But you know, I guess I'm just going to have to cry my tears into Lego Batman, which I'm getting tonight it's supposed to be coming in the mail today. So we'll have that probably to talk about a little bit next week.
Yeah. Every time I open up my Amazon orders, I see that date is still looming. I'm like, God, I just want it. I want to like, I have a Blu-ray copy of it. Yeah. I could just fucking watch it, but you know, yeah,
it's not the 4K, dude. It's not the remastered. Like we and I, like, dude, don't justify, like be the unreasonable, like be like me, be the unreasonable cineast, right? The one that says, no, I'm not going to just watch my Blu-ray because my Blu-ray is 15 years old, which to me is always wild that movie is like close to 15 years old. I want the new version, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I
yeah.
See the pretty package. I want, yeah,
exactly.
I am a child and also a raccoon. So yes. Yeah, it needs to be new and shiny. All right. So, let's talk some Star Wars. You got to see Mandalorian and Grogu about a week early. And
yes.
I've kind of like very nicely and, you know, good friend, responsible internet user, held your tongue about the movie. So I know you're interested in what I think, but what, like walking out, I think the only thing I got out of you was like, it's better than, or the only thing I asked for was, is it better than Rise of Skywalker? But like walking out of the movie, I'm really curious, were you like, huh, so that's a thing? Or were you like, I really like that?
It was both. Like, I know that sounds weird, but it was a very complicated thing where I was like, I looked around and I was like, Am I the only one here that fucking liked that movie for what it was, right? But then I was like, oh, that was it. Okay. But like ultimately I landed on it's a vibe. I liked it. Like, and like at the end of the day, it was because I had adjusted my expectations, I went into it with like, as long as it's just a fun romp, I'll be okay. I don't care about additional characters. I don't care about like, connections to the universe writ large. Tell me a story like you did in the first season. Like, tell me something that's like, give me like just a fucking story. Give me about like, don't add in the judge.
Adam is Rose and John Favreau is Jack. And he's like, tell me a story like you did.
Exactly.
In all
like,
tell me like one of your French girls.
But like, I just wanted Star Wars to not be about Skywalkers. And, you know,
good news, Adam. This is not about the fucking Skywalkers. It's not about, I mean, it has a Force user, but it's not about the Jedi.
Nope.
There's not a lightsaber.
There's no Mando culture to get lost in the weeds on.
Yeah. Like, they eschewed a lot of, like, I feel like the last season three dealt heavy with that.
Yes.
And so I want to get some negative stuff out of the way.
Yeah. Okay. I have some things. Like, I think we probably, so I was going to ask you, what was your initial thought about it?
I really like this movie. Okay. This sounds backhanded. I kind of mean it backhanded. This is a really good season of The Mandalorian.
It is. That's what I was going to say.
It's not a great movie. I liked it. It's a good season of the show. It's not a great movie because it's not a movie. It is probably 8 scripts edited down to a two hour and five minute movie. And would have made for a really fun season of The Mandalorian, I think. And it was about 20 minutes in when I was like, oh, these are scripts for the TV show. They didn't write a movie. They wrote another season of the TV show. And Disney kind of was like, guys, we really need a Star Wars movie because nothing is coming together. Like, at this point, we've had a dozen, quote, announced Star Wars films that have gone nowhere.
Nowhere.
And it was going to be next year before we got Starfighter. And, like, 8 years without a Disney Star Wars, a property that they paid $4 or $5 billion for, hasn't produced any, like, sure, there's the toys and stuff that makes the money. But, like, you need those kids, right? You need the kids. And
that's the important thing, like, I think that people need to remember going into this. Like, and we'll get into that in a second, about what this movie is and who it's aimed towards.
I'm going to get the one big, huge negative thing out of the way.
Yeah.
And it's not a slight at the film itself. It's the presentation of the film. It's too, like, I guess, not film bro, but it is kind of like, too film nerdy of me to just be like, look, man, George Lucas fought the fight to not have opening credits in a Star Wars film.
Yes.
Why the fuck do you have opening credits in a Star Wars film? No, 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 no. End of fucking story. No, there are not opening credits in a Star Wars film. There never have been. Now there are. It really, really upsets me. I think it's completely, for whatever reason, in a TV show, I can ignore it. In a film, like in a Star Wars film, it completely almost just threw me out of it. I was like, why the fuck are their names up here? Why are their names up here? I hate that choice.
Yeah, it well, okay, so I'm gonna,
I know, like, there's probably some guild thing.
No, like, you could do it. Like, I mean, Rogue One did it. Like, you know, like every other movie did it. Like, that's what makes it feel like a TV show.
Yeah. Immediately. Like, it, I was like, this, it's opening like an episode of the, like a season of the show. And, you know, but I to its credit, once the opening credits are gone, that opening action scene is one of the best opening moments for a film I've seen in a long, long time.
Yes. Like, the scale at which they're telling the story, and I feel like people are not saying this enough, which is that the scale is awesome because it brings back Star Wars to what it was circa 1983, which is human scale, but in a way that makes things impressive again. Like the AT-AT or AT-AT, whatever you want to call them, like your choice. I'm going to call them AT-ATs. With the AT-AT chase,
yeah,
like he got it. He got exactly what Kirshner got in "These things are big and lumbering, but also like brings the fun back into that whole, that whole scene is super fun because there's a scale to it. And it makes it like everything in there has scale. Like, do you know what I mean? Like the monsters have weight and scale in a way that they've not had in a lot of movies in a long time. It's like, so, go ahead.
There is a very, very similar thing in Solo that doesn't involve AT-ATs.
Yes.
It does involve like the snowy train. Mountains. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that train sequence is a lot of fun, but there's so much, and I know there's a lot of digital effects here. I know that, but there's so much digital effects in the train scene in Solo. You cannot get lost in that scene. There's a lot of practical here. There's enough practical here that there's weight to it. Like you said, like there's actual weight to the scene. Like when those things start collapsing, it's you feel it, you know?
Yeah.
It's so much fun. It reminded me, it's not quite as well executed as the opening of X2 with Nightcrawler, but it reminded me a lot of that, where it's like,
it has that energy, right?
Yeah, it's so much fun. It's so badass. You get to see this guy, probably the most like fun thing about the movie is that you get to see the Mandalorian be the Mandalorian. Like, even George was quick to like, you know, basically kills Boba Fett with like some goofy fucking Three Stooges shit. Like, yep. We get to see him not really ever even be a badass. He just gets to look badass. And then we see him run away with Han Solo. And then in the next movie, he gets hit in the head and, you know, Wilhelm screams his way into the Sarlacc pit. It's not great. And the show has given us a lot of like Mandalorian badassness to work with, but I don't know, for whatever reason on the big screen and seeing it, probably because it's not the fucking volume. Like, it is a stage. It is to scale. Like, it yeah. is choreographed. It's so fucking cool. Like, watching him take all that down. And then you have this like little thing of, all right, but he also has a baby puppet thing that jumps in and out of the scene and does goofy little things. And it doesn't take anything away from me. Like,
no,
when he disappears to not be in harm. Okay. And then he shows back up on his shoulder and it's all just fine. Like, it doesn't feel disingenuous. It doesn't, it feels natural. And like, even the scene transitions, like in that opening, there's this little mouse droid that they, which it, that's such a weird comedy beat of like, it's, he doesn't, what's him, Himki Madara, who plays the Imperial warlord there, yeah, at the beginning,
who's from the Mandalorian. It's almost like, they're finishing up and tying a loose end.
Yeah.
With the action scene.
Yeah. Which further adds to the, like, oh, this is a season
of TV. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He has this weird moment. He doesn't say I'm sending backup, but he says something like that. And this little mouse droid comes out and just starts roaming down. I'm like, who is that backing up? But like, really it's there to like give you this like moment of like Grogu stopping it and then ripping it apart. And like, it's a lot of fun, and it doesn't take anything away from like the badass action.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hell of a way to open a movie. It's fantastic. And then you hit the downbeat and you get to meet Sigourney Weaver's character, who isn't given a ton to do. You get Steve Bloom as Zeb.
Yes. Yeah.
That early on, and kudos to them. Like, Zeb looks fantastic. It's a Jar Jar level kind of accomplishment, which in this day and age shouldn't be that exciting.
No.
But weird as it sounds, I think we like collectively Hollywood has forgotten how to do that, because like we've seen a lot of CG characters in the last like 5 or 10 years. Not many of them are any fucking good at all.
No, not at all.
And Zeb is almost entirely CG, right? So
yes,
it's pretty fucking great. And I don't know, like, I have some like some down stuff about some of the rest of the movie, but that opening after those opening credits, because that's gonna irk me till the end of fucking time, but it is what it is. After those opening credits, it's 10-12 minutes of like just fucking great stuff.
No, absolutely. There's like, it's weird because like this is a movie that I feel like, like the instant I got out of it, like the comp for me is, this is kind of like similar to like Ron Howard's Willow. It's an adventure romp that has a lot of cutesy stuff in it, but it's not made for like adults. It's made for kids. And if you take that in mind, and it kind of resets everything to Lucas era 1983 to 1988, right? Where he was making Willow, he made Return of the Jedi, and he made Captain EO. Like, he made the Caravan of Courage, he made the Ewok movie. If you take all of those movies and you kind of think about the style and the milieu that he has in those movies, that's literally what Favreau did with this movie. Like, he basically was like, this movie would have made in like 86, 87. Let me make a movie that Lucas made, it would have made in 86, 87. Yeah. And as messy as it is, the execution of it is what I really like. Like, I can look over and there are, like you said, it's a season of The Mandalorian condensed down, right, to a 2-hour-and-15-minute movie. But that isn't a bad thing, but also B, it's in a way that I feel like it's a romp and an adventure that I'm okay with in how it plays out, even though it is super, like, at times you're like, oh, okay, like, this is the next episode. Like, we go from
every fucking time. You're like, this is the script where Mandalorian isn't really in it, and it's all about we get to see things from kind of Grogu's point of view. Like, it's only about Grogu, and like it you can feel those cuts. Like, you can feel where the credits would start, you know, like every single time. And that it's not the worst thing in the world. It's just like, once you know that it's there, it's kind of hard to ignore it.
Absolutely. But like I said, it's a thing where the edges are going to shave off the more I watch this movie.
For sure.
Though also, like, here's the weird thing is that, like, here's where my brain allowed me to look at it and go, okay, this is a movie. Is Favreau executes this not like a TV show, but like a movie. Like, it is shot like a movie. It is edited like a movie. It even sounds like a movie. Whereas, like, the TV show is very much so in a world that it's TV, right? Like, you can tell that it's not shot on the volume, which, thank God, because the TV show was volume the TV show, right? I have the 4Ks of the first two seasons, and it becomes very apparent when you watch it in uncompressed 4K, what is volume and what is not. And a lot of it is volume. Almost annoyingly so. Like, even the stuff in the beginning of the movie on the ice planet where he's running down the hill, it doesn't feel like volume stuff, right? It feels like there's a... everything feels like there was a planet to it. Like, they went to the Rogue One planet. Like, they went to the Rogue One location in Thailand and filmed there for the Rebel base. Like, it doesn't feel like a... It doesn't feel... Like, everything... Like, even the sets feel like there's an anima to them, right? Because there is sets. And that's where I'm like, this feels like it really does feel like Willow. And I keep on mentioning this because I feel like that's the kind of sweet spot. That's where their minds were when they made this season, or this movie, was that it's like Willow's the comp. Because there's a lot of creatures, there's a lot of things, like the I can't think of the creatures' names, the ones that Shirley Henderson plays. Bad Baby.
I call him the Babu Fricks.
Yeah, the Babu Fricks.
That the one character's name is Babu Frick, but like they're just the Babu Fricks to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're the brownies. And Mando is Mad Mardigan, and Grogu is fucking Willow.
They almost steal the fucking show.
They do, with their little fucking spaceship and all their... Dude,
the humor in this movie is pitch perfect. So it's the one thing... Well, there's a lot of things Lucas couldn't do, but one of the things Lucas kept trying to shoehorn into, like, specifically the prequels, that he is not good at, is humor.
Yeah.
Like... He's insufferably bad. Unfunny. Like, yes. He does not
so much get so
jokes.
So, no, so like, much so that most of the jokes that he creates are semi-racist.
Yeah.
Like, that's really wild and tone deaf for a man who's like, who like talks about inclusion and shit like that. Like,
wild. It's weird, but like the humor of Star Wars, like the humor in the original films is not Lucas. It comes from like Harrison being Harrison, like, fighting against the material, you know?
Yeah. Like, or even the puppeteers and the effects makers doing funny things. Like I think of like, the joke to me that I feel is like indicative of this movie is the one in Jedi where the big frog is there and he goes da, 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 and he like snaps up the little creature on Tatooine, like that's the kind of jokes that they're doing, but it's not as visual. Like, there's a lot of weird, like, insider, like, it's like, it's weird because it like the Babu Fricks are like the main source of humor. Them and of course Uncle Marty, like with his whole like deliver, I don't want to do this. That was great. But it's all these like little moments that are like could be twee and cute, but they actually are pretty funny, right?
Yeah. I mean, I laughed without fail every fucking time. And it's weird to be like, it's a really funny Star Wars movie, because like that's not really where the world, like that's not what you expect from Star Wars, but it is like it's really, yeah, really funny. The humor is at the right times. The scene where like the Grogu episode where he builds the fucking hut and it's to scale for him, but it's not to scale for the man. And, like, it's funny the first time and it's like, you're gonna do it again, but then they do it like three or four times and it just makes it funnier. Like the Fricks and the little ship, like it's really, really funny seeing that little ship land and then like them racing through the forest and like as it's slowly dawning on you, the audience, where they're taking the Mandalorian.
Yes.
Like, he can't fit in that ship. What the fuck are y'all doing? Like, what the hell is happening?
But that's like the perfect moment because it's a little bit emotion, because like it dawns on you and then you're like, oh shit.
Oh shit. Oh, like shit. There's no way out. There's no way out. But like, it's funny and also tragic. And you know, and it does get a little like, not to the point with like, again, like it feels episodic, like a TV show, because you're like, oh, this is the episode where we think the Mandalorian's gonna die and he's not gonna die. Like the thing that would have like changed everything is like, oh no, you kill this character that you've created. And that would have been that would have taken some balls that I don't think that Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have.
No, you can't like, so the interesting thing was somebody like Van, like when I was listening to the Midnight Boys, pew pew, shout out to them, listening to their dissection of the episode, he brought up a great point, which is that that episode gives you an idea of what Grogu's life is going to be like when he loses his father.
Yeah.
And he was like, I got emotional because, you know, even though he helps him and stuff, but also like, it's going to be a very lonely life for him. Like Yoda, but like, he's going to have to hunt for himself. He's going to have to like do all these things for himself in this little world where he's going to be a child before he even like, when his dad dies, he's still going to be a child because of the way that their lifespans
work. How slow they age.
Yeah.
It also does give them a chance to show you that, like, he can be competent. Like, he
exactly can fend
for himself. Like, they really, really earn that ending of him, like, bringing him up to the cockpit and starting to show him, like, because it almost becomes, like, well, one of the things that was almost your downfall, Mando, was that you keep treating this child like a child.
Child, yes. Yeah.
But, like, you're not giving him all the, like, you're showing him the armor stuff, but you're not giving him the tools to understand, like, how to get away. Like, you're preparing him for the fight, but you haven't prepared him on how to exit. To when you have to go, like he doesn't know how to fly, you know, like the humor of the rocket that when he's like trying to walk him through, like piloting the thing and he just keeps shooting off the rockets.
Yes.
And like, it's funny. It's a little stupid, but it's supposed to be. But it is funny, but it's also informative in that, like, yeah, he doesn't know this stuff because you haven't shown him any of this stuff. Because all you think is, like, sit there, buckle up, you know, and don't worry about it. Yeah, it all just, it really, really worked. Like, all of that stuff really, really works for me. Whether this was a episodes of a TV show or a movie, like, all of it worked. I really, really enjoyed it. So let's talk about the thing we haven't talked at all about. for the first time in for the first time in Star Wars, we get to see Nal Hutta.
Yes.
So we'll just start with the huts in general. What did you think about, like, the hut of it all? Like, seeing all of that and kind of like, I hesitate to call it a culture, but I guess that's what it is. Like, the hut culture.
It was interesting because, like, and here's Dave. Like, this is the one area that I feel like Dave was world building and pushing out, because, like, and again, him always trying to, like, account for George with Rhoda and, like, you know, like, taking, like, it's just like him to take a much reviled character like Rhoda from the Clone Wars movie and churn it inside out and make it something that's interesting, right? Like, and that's the thing that I left with, was that it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. It was interesting, because also, from what we understand, this is also leftovers from the Star Wars Underworld thing, where we were supposed to actually get to know the Hutts and start to know them quite well and their culture, which was interesting. But it, like I said, it leaves a little to the imagination, but also it was interesting. But also, like, the one choice I don't know if I liked or not was them going from English to Huttese, because I feel like Rhoda, fine. I understand why Rhoda would do that. But the other two Hutts, I feel like, because they're Hutts, they speak Huttese. They would not lower themselves to speak a garbage language.
I agree with you there. Like, those specific characters wouldn't, like, lower themselves is probably the right way that they would think about it, to speak basic. Like, yeah. they if they did do that, it would be something, it would be some kind of slight, and it's never used in that way for them. So it's a weird, weird choice. I've seen a lot of discourse about Rhoda speaking mostly just basic. I'm with you. I don't have a problem with it. I think the bigger issue is how much Rhoda is in this film.
Oh, like, yeah, like, because
it's a pretty major part.
He is a very, and here's the other thing is that as soon as I heard, like, I don't care how much digital trickery you did to his voice, as soon as I heard him, it's Carmy. It's literally cousin. I'm like, oh, cousin Jabba, like, cousin Hutt. But also, like, I understand why they did it. They needed a third wheel that wasn't Zeb. And because they were dealing with the underworld, because they didn't want to deal, like, here, there's a bunch of choices that I, like, here's the problem is that I think that you and I are in the Star Wars bag so much that we see, like, when we're watching it, and I think this is what's distracted for me for a second, and maybe it is for you, is that we can hear the conversations Dave and John are having while Kathy is watching over them while this film is being made. And which is like, well, we don't want to do Imperials because then it's all every other movie. We don't want to do the New Order because they're not just there just yet. And we don't want anything to feel like Andor, and we want it to be a kids movie, but also, like, you know, well, you know what? We have this Hutt thing from, you know, Clone Wars with Rhoda. And if we do Rhoda's like actually an adult. And then that's actually takes us to the fact that we can go back and redo something for George, and we can so that more people will watch Clone Wars. It's literally a conversation you and I probably hear in our heads that other people don't see. and other people are not gonna, but I mean, we're Star Wars heads. We've been thinking about this stuff all of our lives, right? And to see this like on screen, you have to think about the we think about those decisions, and that's where it was distracting for me. Was, I don't know about you, but for me it was, it's the decision to include Rhoda, and like, and it, the moment I knew it was that decision was when they showed the Clone Wars picture of him.
Yeah, it's a little like, I know it's meant to be like an Easter eggy kind of thing, but yeah, that it was a little weird to like reference all of, I never really understood like the Rhoda thing. Like, I don't know why we go back to that. I don't have a huge problem with it. It's just the only thing in the entire movie that I was like, I wish, like, the Nal Hutta stuff I love. I say for the first time ever we see Nal Hutta. I should say in live action.
In live action, yeah.
Yeah, we see it in the Clone Wars. And it, you know, and to everybody who's upset about Rhoda speaking basic, I would direct you to those episodes of the Clone Wars, The Hunt for Zero the Hutt. Zero pretty much only speaks basic.
Yeah.
I'm like,
And it's the same voice actor, I think.
Yeah. It's whatever. That doesn't bother me. I don't think they've ever perfected the Hutts moving.
No, they haven't.
Ever.
No.
Ever. So making a character like a pit fighter who's also a Hutt, I will give them this. It looks as good as I think it positively can.
Like, okay, so I was going to ask you about this because I had the same reaction. Do you think that kids that grew up with the prequels and that grew up with the Clone Wars and are now of age just accept the way that the Hutts move?
I guess so. I mean, I probably would, because it bothers me less now than it did, say, 20 years ago.
Or even like 30 years ago, 30 years ago when we were watching it on the first time we saw Jabba move.
Special editions. Yes. It bothers me a lot less now.
Yeah.
But it's still not perfect. And it's probably because like watching a slug like creature move on screen is never going to be appealing.
No, at all.
Yeah. Like, they're way more intimidating just sitting, you know?
Yeah.
It actually looks goofy when they start moving and trying to fight. As good as it can.
Do you miss the puppets?
I do. But this movie, I keep wanting to say show. This movie has a lot of puppetry work. So it's hard for me to like come down on them for that, because like I would rather have full-on puppet Babu Fricks and Grogu and you figure out something with the Hutts, even though there's a lot of Hutt stuff in this. Like I need the Frick and Grogu puppets because they just I don't know, they work so well, and it's probably costly either way. But I'm glad you devote more to those characters and less to the Hutts.
Well, and it was also probably a budgetary thing because there's a whole entire, this is the thing that we haven't talked about, which is that like the Grogu taking care of Mando scene is like 25 minutes of the movie. It's a full on section of the movie. And so it makes more sense that the Babu Fricks and Grogu are set up in a way that are like puppets than Rhoda and the Hutts, because the Hutts are only in it. The Hutts are only in it. Like they have three scenes, Like, they literally have three scenes. Now, Rhoda is in it a lot. Like, don't get me wrong. And I do like...
Okay, and so like, the fighting stuff has to be... Like, you can't do that with puppetry, right?
No, you absolutely can't. You're not going
to be able to do that. So, no. Like, that's a level of, like... You're going into, like, Harryhausen, and you're looking at more of, like, a like claymation kind of thing. But, like, higher end. So... It's not going to be great if you try to do that with puppets. So you have to do it digitally. I get it. There's definitely some stuff with Rhoda, like, that isn't the fight stuff, that digitally just doesn't work. Like when they're sitting on the beach, like scouting out that house, it just doesn't work. Not really.
No, it doesn't. But like, there's some stuff that really does fucking work. Like I'm very excited for Ahsoka season 2, because you know that this is R&D for that. Like, they're basically taking the render stuff that they did with this, and like, they have not, like, I love the fact that when Filoni has a character, he never loses an inch or a bit of the kind of bite that the character has. And for us Zeb heads, like, this is like gold, because all of the lines that he says, all of the action. I mean, when he brings out his gun lance, Jesus Christ. Yeah. I like this movie. I know that I said that it's not connected to anything, but I also like feel like, unless you're a Rebels head or you're a Clone Wars head, this is not... Yeah, but
you can definitely get by without... Oh, no,
like somebody I went to... Like somebody I was talking to afterwards that had seen this movie, that had not seen the show, really liked the movie a lot. And they were like, I'm going to go back and watch the show now. Because, like, they were, like, intimidated because they thought that they had to know everything. And I'm like, no, you really didn't. I'm like, I was like, it's surprising.
It helps inform stuff, but like, there's nothing that you can't just like hand wave away, because you're just like, well, I don't know really what that means or like who that character is.
Yeah.
You know, like it's nice to just be this standalone, because like even The Mandalorian, the show, kind of by the end was buckling under the weight of its own three-season mythology, you know?
Yeah.
Like, trying... Not just it, but, unfortunately, that show had taken on a lot of weight of, like, having to show you why the Palpatine stuff happens and, like, what is all that about? And, like, they even sell this movie on, like, the return of, like... They're still fighting the Empire, which might be a mistake, because that it's literally not even a thing in the movie. Like, it gets mentioned a lot, but
yes,
it's not a thing in the movie. It is just an adventure of the Mandalorian and Grogu. I actually texted Spencer this. One of the things that upsets me is like, if this movie isn't as successful as they want it to be, it could mean the end of those characters. And that's a big fucking bummer.
Yes.
But the other thing is, if it is pretty successful, it means no more Mandalorian and Grogu on television, probably. And that's kind of a bummer. I'm okay with a movie like every couple of years. That's kind of like where we were at with the show. We got 3 seasons in 5 years.
Yep.
Maybe 4. There wasn't a season last year. So, and the first season was in 2019.
Yes.
So yeah, 3 seasons in 4.5 years. So if we got a Mandalorian and Grogu movie every 2.5 years, I think I'd be okay with that. But like, I enjoy the characters enough that I don't want to see them go away. And unfortunately, no matter how this movie shakes out, it feels like it means that we're not going to see as much of these characters as we have been seeing. Unless Dave is like, hey, people love this. Can we do an animated movie? Or, I mean, an animated show? Yeah, in which case, okay, I'm okay with that.
I just saw the Thursday numbers. It's going to overperform. It's going to way overperform. Like, it opened to 12 million, which means that it's going to be anywhere between 100 to 140, depending on what it does on Monday for the weekend, which they were only tracking it to be 85. I love how, like, tracking has gotten to be so wildly inconsistent now because they just don't know how people are going to react to things. So it's going to be at least good opening weekend. And I actually think that once the word gets out that this is a lot of fun, that I think that people are going to see it. I think it's going to make a little bit more than everybody expected it to. And it's definitely going to recoup. I don't think that people are going to listen to what critics have to say about this. Like, people have been trashing it. Like, critics have been trashing it. I've been, like, reading. I'm like, wow, you guys really hate it. Yeah,
I saw Dave Chin's, like, I caught a bit of, like, it, but I'm like, I knew he would hate something like this. But it was like, this is just a bad movie. And I'm like, critically, it's hard for me to disagree with him. It's not a good movie. It's a really great season of television. Like, well, you're not wrong. It's not a movie. It's a bunch of episodes of TV.
Okay, it's not a film. Empire is a film. Star Wars is a film, right? This is a movie. Like, this is like a movie. Like, this is a summer movie. Like, yeah, like, it's kind of like, in a way, it's kind of like the Flintstones, where the Flintstones live action movie is basically a giant ass, like, 3-episode TV movie, right? Done on the big screen. Like, it has those origins, but like the funniest part is that, like, if I look at it from John Q Public's point of view, they're not going to see that. They're going to they're going to watch this and just watch it as what it is, which is a roller coaster. It has ups and downs and it has different parts. Like, this is the loop to loop part. This is the slow part. This is the descending. This is the drop off. And at the end of the day, like, I feel like I'm like, how could you, like, be this, like, how can you be so, like, Chen is one of them. There's a couple of other people that I was, like, reading. I was like, whoa, you really hated this movie. Like, why did you hate this movie?
Given like, what, I listen to the Filmcast every week, but.
Yeah.
And given what, like, I hear them champion, especially Dave, like, that's not surprising. What's frustrating is that, like, that permeates and gets up to, like, Lucasfilm higher-ups, and they think that, like, people, like, Star Wars has to be adult now, and it doesn't have to only exist with the Skywalker saga.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be an adult franchise. Like,
it doesn't need to be Andor.
It just doesn't. Like, I'm glad that the people that like Andor. It's boring and, like, not what I want in Star Wars. I mean, for all its flaws, this is what I want in Star Wars. This is fun, man. Like, yeah. Even the stuff that doesn't really work is fun. But, like, the humor's there. The action's there. It's got a lot of heart to it. It's got a message to it. But it's not preachy, you know? It's... Everybody wants... Like, everybody cites Empire. And I get it. Empire is the greatest. And all anybody mentions when they talk about it is the like... dark shit in Empire.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of fun stuff in Empire Strikes Back.
Well, I mean, Yoda's a crazy old coot. Like, I mean, he's just an idiot. He's like he's crazy. Like,
there's him and R2-D2 get into a fucking fight. Like
mine.
Yeah. Like there's fun stuff in there. Like,
yeah,
it's the franchise is not without its fun moments. Like, yeah, some of that stuff overtakes the prequels, and George really, somebody really needed to like step in, but like George wanted to do what he wanted to do. Like he, like I, Carrie Fisher is, well, in, you know, before she passed away, talked about like George came to her and was like, can you take a look at these scripts? And like, because she got a lot of work as a script doctor. Like it's unbelievable how many like scripts she was involved in that you're like, wait, Carrie Fisher like had her hands in that. And he trusted her. And even she was like, George, you have the money. This is your baby. Fuck them. Do what you want to do. And that's probably the wrong thing. Somebody could have stepped in. And it wasn't until he met Dave, I think, that really, and Dave didn't push back, I don't think, a lot, but he was there to like better guide that voice. Like, so it wasn't, it was George funneled through somebody, not just George.
Yeah.
So, and this feels a lot like that, like the best of that stuff. Like I said, even when it doesn't work, the Rhoda stuff doesn't always work, but it's a lot of fucking fun. And it's nice to know that Star Wars on the big screen can still be fun, because like, I don't know, the few like decent moments in Rise of Skywalker are overshadowed by all the ridiculous shit.
Yes.
Like I actually, all those movies are now like it's all overshadowed. And that sucks, because while I think there's been a prequel appreciation like come around, I don't know if we'll get to a sequel appreciation. Like, hopefully we will, at least for Last Jedi. Like I hope we do, but I don't know, man. This, if nothing else, proves that Star Wars can be fun and enjoyable without Jedi, without lightsabers, without anybody named fucking Skywalker, or, you know, naming themselves Skywalker on the fucking big screen. So it actually gives me a lot of hope for Starfighter next year. Like, that movie can, like, I know it can be fun and good. So
yeah, like it definitely has that. Like, I feel like this is going to surprise people, because the vitriol that's been spit out its way by critics and by a certain sector of fandom that has not seen it yet, and probably won't go see it. It'll just continue to talk shit about it. And that's fine. Go ahead and talk your shit. I mean, like, you know, do it. But I feel like for me, it's gotten to the point now where it's like, well, like, you know, let's just calm down a bit and just go back to like when it used to be fun. Right? Like, that's ultimately where I kind of came out of this, which was like, damn, that was a lot of fun. It was like, how long has it been since I've seen a Star Wars film that was a lot of fun? And the answer is a very long time. Very long time. Like Rise of, like none of the prequel trilogy were fun, or the sequel trilogy were fun. Like, there was no sense of adventure in them. Like, they were.
I think the first one had that.
Kind of, I guess. For a little while. I guess. Like, yeah. I mean, when Han and Chewie do the instant, jump to light speed and stop, that's fun. Like, that's kind of fun. And, like, the whole, like, whatever that thing was, like, when they're in the bar, that's fun. But it's aping things from other movies To which I'm like, of course, it's fucking JJ for you, though. Like I really have like gone from like really liking that movie. Like I was a huge apologist for that movie to not liking that movie at all. And the Last Jedi also has the problem where there's no fun in that movie. There is no fun in that. That movie is like, there's moments that are goofy, but that movie for by far and large is a movie that's super serious, right? Like, I mean, and with good, I guess it's with good, like, you know, cause, because I mean, Jesus, they're telling a story, right? They are telling a time clock story that you're like, oh Jesus, like that's bad. Like they have a certain amount of time, right? Okay, fine. Like, I don't care. Go ahead and tell that fucking story, right? But ultimately, like, this is a movie, like I said, like, it's, like, I hate to really keep on badgering on this, but it really feels like Willow, where there's a sense of fun and adventure, and it's goofiness, and it's just, I kind of love it.
Willow bombed at the box office, so.
Yes, it did.
You know, it only became, like, this cult, like, crowd thing, like on home video. So
yeah,
I don't think this is destined for that. No. Like just for shits and giggles, I looked at Metacritic and Rotten Tomato. Metacritic is like, it's at like 58%, but like it's generally positive, and like Rotten Tomatoes is at 63% on the tomato meter, but like the popcorn thing, which is more like the audience, is like 88%. So like that's not bad.
No, you know, no. And like, you know, if you can get into the 90 percentile range, you're fine.
Yeah.
You're fine. Like, right. Like you're fine. But again, like, it's one of those things where it's like, we really kind of need like I'll be interested to know what happens, but ultimately I liked it.
Me too. I get the like quote fans that are really just haters shitting on it. I don't understand the critical reception at all. Cause like, I mean, if you just want to be like, hey, it's not a movie, it's just a bunch of episodes, but like, hey, it's fun, I had a good time, which is kind of like what we're saying. Like, yeah, I don't know. It is what it is. And like there's I've seen some stuff about like, oh, this is just Disney at its, you know, crassness, like just searching for like to be able to sell toys and shit. And to that I would say, like, hey, do you know how George Lucas made all his money?
Exactly.
Do you know how he made money? Do you know he took no money for the first Star Wars film? He asked for one thing only. Merchandising
and sequel rights. Merchandising, it's, and sequel rights.
Like that. That's how he became George Lucas. That's what does it. You know, the movie does need to do well, but it also needs to move merch. You know, like I know that's crass commercialism and like whatever, but that's true. That's just the world that we live in. Like it's the merch that keeps it alive. There hasn't been a Cars film in how long? Like when was Cars
20? I think it's been 15 or 16 years.
2017. So
2017, really
only 9 years. And
but still a decade.
Was not well received.
No.
So, neither was Cars 2, even though I guess it did okay. But that film stays alive because of merchandise.
Yep.
Kids still buy the merchandise. So that franchise is alive and well. Like, are we getting more movies? Probably not. But, like, we're getting, like, it still permeates into, like, the culture. So, yeah, you know, as long as it sells toys, then I think we'll be okay. As long as it doesn't lose money at the box office and it sells toys, we'll be okay. Because we liked it. Like, I am we are it. Like, we are, I don't want to say we're not the first generation Star Wars fans because we weren't there when it premiered.
No.
But we are the first, like, we are among, like, that. No, fuck it. We are. Like, we are the first generation to grow up where Star Wars existed. Because Star Wars is 77. I was born in 79. So, Empire's in 80. And so, like, Star Wars was a thing. Like, my dad was taping them on television so we could watch them anytime we wanted. You know, like, we grew up in that world where Star Wars existed. Like, it wasn't a thing we discovered. It was, like, it was the nerd culture, you know? And so, what I think what we think about it matters more than anything. And, like you said, we enjoyed it. So, I want to go see it again. I really do. I'd like to go see it in, like, true IMAX. Mm-hmm. And
it's impressive, dude. Yeah. It's really, like, I'm going to see it in just a regular 30. I'm going to see it in regular, like, DCP on Saturday with my wife. And I'm actually going to be a little disappointed because that 70, that was impressive. Like part of the reason why it was kind of like it's so impressive because the screen is so enveloping. I didn't even notice the credits until they were halfway over. Then I was like, "What? Why are there credits?"
Yeah.
Like it's because it was at the bottom of the screen. Like it. Like, and my field of vision is so it. Like, the 70 takes up so much of your vision.
Oh yeah.
And it's just impressive. Like I said, it's very impressive. How they worked it. It's a great. Like, it's a great B summer movie. Like I said, it doesn't, like, I'm getting tired of this whole black and white. It either has to be a masterpiece or it's a piece of shit, because that's not the way that movies work. It just, there's just not. I live in a subtle gray area where things can work and be entertaining at the same time that they don't work, and like, certain things don't work and there's a complicated relationship with it, right? Like, but I'm just happy that there's somebody that can do a Star Wars that actually feels like a Star Wars and not fan service.
It's also a nice reminder that Jon Favreau can make films.
Like, oh yeah.
Can make a competent movie. Like, even though this is just mashed together episodes of a show, like, he does know how to direct. Like, it's been, I know The Lion King also came out in 2019, but, like, it's been a while since we had a Jon Favreau movie where I was like, oh wait, this guy's actually pretty good.
Well, also, like he went from one meat grinder to another meat grinder. I mean, think about it. He went from, like, I don't, like, I know this is going to sound terrible, but I don't consider his work in Marvel, his two movies in Marvel, because of how chaotic they were and how much Marvel took over those films, those being Favreau movies. Like, literally, Zathura is the last movie he did. And then after that, or Chef. Chef is the last movie he did. After that, it's all in the wilderness until this movie. Like, which is really wild considering that he made The Jungle Book, he made The Lion King, two Iron Man movies, but all of them were under the guise of big budget, super huge, big budget filmmaking that were dictated by Disney, ultimately Disney and Marvel. And this movie feels more of like he got into a place to where, like, it took 15 years of being told what to do with Disney, and Disney going, oh, or him going, okay. And then finally The Mandalorian being a hit to where he was like, no, guys, me and Dave are going to do our thing. Kathy, you don't have to, we're not going to listen to you. Cause I guarantee you, this is this to me feels like the last movie where, like, this feels like the only movie where this is officially the start of the non-Kathy Kennedy era. Like, doesn't it? It feels like there are things in here that Kathy would never let slip. All of the comedy is stuff that she would never let because she's so glued to what the fans think. And she's part of the problem. I, like, ultimately, I feel like she is a huge part of the problem when it comes to what Star Wars has become.
Because they listen to internet discourse instead of like doing what they should have done and just crafted good movies. So
it's kind of like, it's funny because like I mentioned Cameron, and I watched I was watching Fire and Ash, and I was a little harsh on it. Like I harshed the buzz on the on this next one, like on Fire and Ash. Rewatching it in 4K, A, I was impressed, but B, it's like it's at least the stories that Cameron wants to tell, and he's telling them not through fan service, but the way that he wants to tell them, and there's a thrust in that. And there's a thing where I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's not what I wanted. It's what he wanted. But damn, that's Cameron. And this feels like, you know what? This isn't what fandom wants. This isn't what the monkeys on the internet want.
It's the story they wanted to tell.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
it's fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, we didn't even talk about the giant fucking robots that look like Phil Tippett models.
Oh, like, they're pretty fucking cool.
Damn. Like, or the space battle for the first time, or like the X-Wing battle for the first time felt like cool to watch. Like Sigourney Weaver fighting in an X-Wing was kind of badass. I'm not going to lie.
And it was nice to see like all those little characters from Mando like show up, even though they don't get a ton to do. Yeah. You do get to see. I love Dave Filoni.
Take off the hat.
Yeah. Like, okay, man. But it's fine. I'm really excited to see it again. I hope I get to see it in true IMAX. Next week, I think we're going to see Tudor. I know you've already seen it.
Yes.
So hopefully that's what we're talking about next week. I'm excited to see this. It just looks like it's going to be a really good tense time. So
it's a very good movie. Like I told you, it's very much a throwback to a type of film that we as teenagers loved. Like I'm fairly certain that Logan and Ryan at 16, 17 would have attached to this movie the way that I would have attached to it at 16, 17. Like it's like one of those types of movies where it's like, that they can do this now, but it's like you don't see it. But like when you're a kid, it's like, oh, they're combining like the musical world with the crime world, and this dude, like it very much like, you know what? And this is why, like, it feels like early Rian Johnson. That's ultimately what it feels like.
I'm excited for that. Really, really excited for it. So until then, go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yeah, movieowl.com, where we got a ton of good new 4Ks that we're reviewing. And We've got a ton of content out there, and just go ahead and go to the site, read everything that we're doing.
And we'll see you guys next week. Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 The Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together here with me now.